Welcome to the Saints Happy Hour Podcast with host Ralph Malbro and featuring bloggers Andrew Juge of SaintsNation.com, Kevin Held of The Team Drops the Ball, and Dave Cariello of Canal Street Chronicles. This podcast is nothing but serious football talk and hardcore analysis.
Which four of you would survive the longest in the zombie apocalypse, and in which order would you die?
Well, Ralph, no offense, you're going first.
Oh, definitely. No.
The zombies would smell Dave's sugar blood and target him.
They'd get his...
I don't even have a joke, Dave smells like nougat.
Now here's your host, Ralph Malbro.
Alright, welcome to Saints Happy Hour Podcast. As always, we are sponsored by the Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. They are awesome. They have 136 draft beers. They have a 50-foot TV. You can go there, you can watch LSU, the regional. Yeah, it got deluged with rain, but LSU, we know they're making the Super Regional next year. Next week, go there, watch all LSU baseball. Football is going to be starting soon. You can watch the NBA Finals. The Pelican House, 2572 City Place Court, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You should support them because they support us. All right, we have a great special guest that Andrew has lined up. Jonathan Goodwin, former Super Bowl champion, two-time Super Bowl participant, former New Orleans Saints center, is kind enough to join us even after our audio disaster last week. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. Glad to be a part of the podcast.
Thank you. I guess my first question is, Jonathan, with the Saints' influx of, you know, they're going to be reshuffling the offensive line. Pete might play guard. He might play tackle. They might have two new guards. They might have all that. As an offensive lineman, mm-hmm. How difficult is it when you say you have two new starters or three new starters to hit the ground running and be good when you start in the games that count in September?
It's a challenge, but you know that's what the OTAs are for, and training camp, and you know the preseason games. So I think it's about finding the right guys that can come in and get the job done, and then finding that group as quick as possible, and then letting them play together and, you know, get to know each other and, get used to each other. So that'll be the key. You know, hopefully, some of those guys that are competing for a position will go ahead and stand out early in the off season. You know, coaches can kind of go ahead and narrow down who they want to be in the starting lineup.
Well, Goody, and thanks again for doing this, man. I know it's been a long time coming, so it's great to finally have you on. But it's interesting, early in your career with the Saints, you were kind of in a similar situation where you joined the team and where you were a backup for a while behind Jeff Fain, and then you come in and you're the starter, and you know, the team was 7-9 for a couple of years, kind of similar to mm-hmm. what they're going through now, two bad stretches, and then out of nowhere, boom, 2009 comes, and not only do you make the playoffs, but you go on to win the Super Bowl. And so mm-hmm. I guess fans obviously are looking for silver lining here. There were obviously the turnovers on defense. That was the big thing, that they were able to create turnovers. But besides that, can you maybe tell us what this team needs right now? What was it that you guys were able to do to flip the script from 2-7-9 seasons to becoming a 14-2 type team?
I think like you said, the defense provided a lot of turnovers that year, and they at times would give up some yardage, but they may give up some yardage and then they would make a play and create a turnover. Offensively, I think the key that year is, a lot of games we did have leads and we were able to get up on people, but I think the key that year was we had a balanced run game. So, people had to respect the run, and then when we did get leads, we were able to finish the games off by running the ball. That took pressure off of Drew, and, when you're able to run the ball when you want to, that opens up a lot on the offensive side of the ball, and I think that was key for us that year.
Jonathan, it felt like in 2000.
So how close do you think the guys are? How close do you think these guys are to duplicating the running attack that you have?
I think they have some talented guys. Teron is a great left tackle. Then, the two guards, spots are kind of up in the air. Max is a great center, and then, you know, Zach's a proven right tackle. So, you know, I think that, you know, the talent's there. It's just about putting the guys in the right situations and putting them in, you know, adjusting techniques here and there. And, you know, I look forward to seeing what they do this year because I think they can do great things.
Jonathan, you know, in 2009, you guys sort of, I feel like you guys sort of flipped the script, as most teams say, you know, we're going to run to get ahead and then we're going to throw to close out the game. It seemed in 2009, y'all sort of did the opposite in that you kind of would throw a bunch to get the big lead. And then, especially in the first half of the year, it was, okay, the Saints were up by 10, 14 points. Now it's Mike Bell time in the third and fourth quarter to sort of close it out. Is that sort of the Sean Payton philosophy on offense, is sort of the run is sort of the hammer to sort of close out teams?
Well, I think you always, if you're closing games out with the run, I mean you had a lead, and you know, if you got a lead, you don't want to be putting the ball in the air because you don't want to take a chance at incomplete passes and clock stoppages. You know, that year in particular, like you said, you know, when you got a quarterback like Drew Brees and you got a great offensive mind like Coach Payton, you know, you can do some damage in the passing game. And then and that year, you know, was special. Like you said, we got up on a lot of teams, and then when it came time to it, we had the line and we had the running backs that we could close the games out. And, you know, that's when you can do that, that takes a special group to do that. And it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of practice. But I think they have the guys there that are capable of duplicating that success.
Well, Goody, you had a long career in the NFL, and I don't know how many people know this that are listening, but you played in college with Tom Brady at Michigan, and then now, obviously, in the pros, you play with Drew Brees, and you've been around other talented quarterbacks, too. I mean, you played with the Jets, and then, of course, Kaepernick in San Francisco, who had a tremendous amount of success when you were there. I'm curious, you know, there's a lot of quarterbacks, Flacco, Stafford, Jay Cutler, Kaepernick, who you played with, guys that have had success that some weeks really show the potential that they can be special, but they're not consistent week in, week out. And then you see guys that you've played with like Drew, like Tom Brady, where they're just doing it every single week. It seems like it's a small difference, but it makes all the difference. So I'm just curious if you can, as best you can, maybe explain to us, what is it about those guys in particular, and what is it about elite quarterbacks that allows them to separate from the pack of these guys that perform well on occasion but can't do it every time?
Well, I think when I think about a guy like Drew and I think about a guy like Tom Brady, the number one thing that stands out to me is, you know, they're really smart guys. You know, you can't fool them. They prepare well. And, you know, think of Drew, a lot of people, I don't know, people realize how great of a work ethic he has. He is, he treats every day, he wants to get better every day, whether it's a practice, a walkthrough, or whatever. He's in the weight room, and he's unbelievable. And, you know, that, with the fact that he's one of the smartest guys, you know, on the field in the NFL, and he's also, you know, he doesn't have the strongest arm in the world, but he has probably the best touch in the NFL. He's probably the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, Tom, in a lot of ways, is similar to Drew when it comes to work ethic and just, you know, going out there and knowing what to do with the ball and when and where to go with the ball.
Jonathan, not that the quarterback.
So it sounds like you're saying it's a big commitment and focus more than anything else.
Yeah, because with all the things you see in the NFL now, all the different looks, the blitzes and the coverages, if you don't prepare and you, it takes a lot of time. It really does. You know, Drew would be at the facility just as much as the coaches sometimes, it seems like. And, you know, there's a lot on his plate as a quarterback. And if you don't put that time in to have an idea of what's coming and just to study as much film as possible at that position, you're in trouble.
Jonathan, it sounds to me almost like you're saying the quarterback, they don't necessarily have to be the best player on the team, although that's what you would maybe want, but they definitely have to be sort of the guy that's the hardest worker. And maybe that's unfair to say that the quarterback has to be that, but it seems to me in all your experiences with Brady and Drew Brees that's kind of like what it's got to be. The quarterback's got to be the first one in and the last one to leave, and that's just part of being a quarterback.
Yes, they definitely have to have that type of mentality, and you know, just it may not be fair, but guess what? The quarterback gets all the when things go great, he gets all the limelight. So it's deserved for a guy like Drew, for a guy like Tom Brady, those a guy like Aaron Rodgers, those elite quarterbacks, they deserve the limelight because they get it. They have to put in the time and the work to be successful. So, you know, not to mention Drew's a great guy. So I'm a big Brees fan. So I don't know if I'm partial, but you know, he is definitely great in all ways.
Well, Goody. So real quick about this guard situation, we're kind of in this limbo status where we don't know who the starting guards are going to be. And you've played with Senior Kelemete and you've played with Tim Lelito, and those guys are kind of penciled in as the starters. And then you got this first round pick, Andres Pete, who, you know, is obviously the future. And there's a lot of talk about him moving to guard. I'm curious, how realistic is it for a guy like Andres Pete, who by all accounts is a tackle? How realistic is it for a guy like that to move to guard? Can he be successful? And how do you see that whole thing shaking out?
Well, it's like you said, it's not an easy transition, and you know, but the guy, you know, he was a first round pick, so we, you know, he's got some talent. You know, it's just about whether he's going to go in and put in the work and apply himself to make the adjustment. You know, when you're at guard, you know, guys get on you quicker than they do at tackle. So that's one thing he has to adjust for. But, you know, being that he was a first-round tackle, I know he has great feet. So it's just about going in and learning the little nuances to the position and putting in the work to become a great guard.
Goody, as a casual fan and not like a hardcore film watcher like Andrew is, what's something that sort of like the casual NFL fan that watches games every Sunday, what's something that we can look for on offensive line play where you can look at it and say, oh, that guy's struggling, or ooh, that, you know, that guy, that's not so good. That could be a problem.
That's a great question. You know, it's to me, the offensive line position is in some ways tough to judge without knowing what a player's responsibility was. I mean, now, don't get me wrong. Sometimes you see a guy getting ran over, and you know he messed up. He got whipped on the plate. But you know, there's a lot of things that go into it, from the footwork on a double team. You know, that could determine whether the double team is successful or not. It's just it's a lot of tricky things to see from a TV copy. You know, the best film to watch offensive line play is the end zone copy on the coach's film.
Jonathan, fun question for you. When, and I know maybe a team success is, hey, we won the Super Bowl, that's sort of the pinnacle of my career, but was there a moment in your career where you played just fantastic personally, individually, and you said, you know what, that was when I was at my freaking best I ever was as an athlete in the NFL, and I just destroyed people that day. Do you have a memory like that?
I would say, you know, a game that stands out to me is the Super Bowl when we beat the Colts.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like I had a pretty good game, and you know, I'm a guy on the field that really doesn't do a lot of talking, don't do a lot of trash talking. And the two defensive tackles for the Colts that day got to talking, and me and Carl and Ja got to talking. And, you know, we all had a great game. As you can see, I think
Drew only had 4 incomplete passes. But, you know, that's a game that stands out to me. It's, you know, maybe a couple games in Frisco, but, you know, we're not going to bring those up.
No. That never happened. You never left.
Okay.
Well, Giddy, one thing I want to say real quick, you know, and obviously another big moment for you, I know, was making the Pro Bowl. You know, just getting that validation from around the league, from the coaches, from the other players that, you know, they kind of viewed you as one of the best players at your position. So a big moment for you, obviously. Is there anything, I mean, obviously you kind of did it all. I mean, you had a lot of success at Michigan. You know, those teams won a lot of games. You won the Super Bowl. You made the Pro Bowl. You went in a period in your career where you went, I think, 6, 7, or 8 seasons where you played 16 games and didn't miss a single start. I mean, is that – I mean, could you have written it any better? I mean, are there any regrets whatsoever from your pro career?
No, definitely no regrets. You know, I you know, definitely had to earn – every year and every into my NFL career, but you know, I definitely have no regrets. You know, when it was during my last year, I knew that it was time to let it go, and you know, fortunately to this point, I haven't missed it. I know I made the right decision, and you know, it was a fun ride. I'm blessed to have had the opportunity, and you know, I'll be sitting back saying who that every week.
what's your gut, before we let you go, what's your gut say the Saints are going to be this year? Not necessarily, you don't have to give me a record, but do you feel like they're going to move out of that 7-9 sort of purgatory that they've been in the last couple of years?
I think so. You know, so even throughout those years, the offense has still been successful. You know, they've had the games here and there where, of course, you know, they hadn't really had a great game. But, you know, that's the one thing they've been able to move the ball even throughout these past 2 years at 7-9. And I think we would definitely see some improvement on defense. And I think that's the key to breaking out of that 7-9 middle of the pack type record.
Yeah, I guess one last question I have for you, Goody, is you look at – I mean, you've been on the other side of this ball where how frustrating – and I know I'm not going to ask you to throw anyone under the bus or throw your old teammates under the bus or anything like that, but how
no
frustrating
bus tossing
does it get? You know, where you've got the 32nd ranked defense and you've got the number one offense or a top five offense, and you're putting up points, you're putting up yards, and – you're a team collectively, but how hard is it to not point the finger or mentally, you know, fall into that trap of starting to blame someone when you're doing your job and you feel like these Saints teams have just been so weighted towards offense and so bad defensively?
Well, for me, you know, with my personality, you know, I was never really a point the finger guy. And, you know, I would always think about what I was doing wrong. So I guess that's how I kind of balanced it out. But, you know, because, you know, if I'm not perfect, you know, I can't point a finger. And one thing about the world of football, you know, everybody's always searching to play that perfect game, but you never do. And it's about just minimizing the mistakes you do make. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what type of improvement they have on defense because, you know, anytime you got a quarterback like Drew Brees, if you can get him some type of help on that side of the ball, he's going to win you a lot of games.
Well, Jonathan, I don't want to share more than you're comfortable with me sharing, but I know you had some coaching opportunities this offseason. Most people don't know this, or I don't know how many Saints fans know this, but your brother – very successful with the Arizona Cardinals as their offensive coordinator. They've been doing tremendously well with him at the helm. Any interest in getting back in the league or maybe at the lower level, college, high school, and coaching?
I've had some thoughts here and there, and I actually explored the opportunity to coach at my high school alma mater, and I ended up deciding not to. So right now, I've been enjoying being able to go to my kids' games and
coaching's
like
a lot
that.
Of work, so, right? Coaching's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. But you put in a lot more hours, and you know, I already feel like I've missed a lot of time with them because of my playing. So I didn't want to, you know, retire and then increase my hours. So I, for now, you know, I'm a stay away from it, but who knows down the road, maybe I'll explore it a little bit more.
All right. Well, Jonathan Goodwin, Super Bowl champion with the Saints. Thanks for giving us time. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Goody.
All right. Now we're joined by everyone is here this weekend. This Monday. And we're and hopefully it'll record. But me and Andrew, we guarantee you that you will hear Jonathan Goodwin. Isn't that right, Andrew? It's 100%. It's clear.
I mean, I hope
it's crystal,
so.
It's crystal clear. They heard it just before. He was on the podcast just before, so it's perfect. And of
we
course,
we delivered, man.
We delivered. It only took a backup to the backup to the backup. But by God, we got audio. So we're joined by Kevin
you
and Dave.
You actually listened to it.
Yeah,
you actually played it back and listened to it.
I played it back and listened to it. It's crystal clear, okay. Dave. And it doesn't have even when Goodwin made good points, he didn't pull a Dave and like drop out in the middle.
I asked Ralph before the podcast started. I said, "What's your level of confidence in the audio? Is it like Morton Anderson in his prime kicking a 32-yarder, or is it Orlando Mare during his stint with the Saints?"
And what did I text you?
Kicking a 48-yarder.
And what did I text you back, Andrew?
You told me that's an insult to Orlando Mare.
It was. So, the Saints kind of sort of had actual news today where they might be fishing for trying to trade for George O'Leary? Or am I, he's the Notre Dame coach.
Isn't it
well,
Leary?
He was
it's
never
not
the Notre
O'Leary.
Dame coach.
It's Leary. I gotta.
His last name is Leary.
I'm gonna call him George.
Not O'Leary. Like, why are you trying to make him Irish?
I don't know.
It's Ronald Leary.
Ronald Leary. The Saints are thinking of trading for
Lionel. Lionel Leary.
Ronald. Like Ronald. Like Ronald McDonald.
I'm going to Saints.
And I called him George, and I made him George and dropped an O.
You made him George O'Leary, then George Leary, then Ron O'Leary, then Lon O'Leary.
Kevin, the audio quality of this show may go up, and it may go down, and it may hit rock bottom. But me mispronouncing names, that's the one consistent
it's
thing.
It's here to stay.
It's here
yep.
to
it's
stay.
The that's the everlasting trend.
Yeah. People were getting on me over the weekend about guard because I was talking to on Twitter about guard for like the 900th time, but I like to talk Saints. But here's the thing, like, and people today were like, well, if they trade for guard, then isn't your whole hysterics about the draft and them not drafting a guard? They were like, don't you look really stupid? And I was like, no, I wanted them to get a guard. I said they needed a guard, and that they got one in the summer if they trade with Dallas. It doesn't make my rantings not correct. Like, they still need a guard, Andrew.
Well, I think if they pick up Leary, it's clear that the Saints agree with you.
Yes. Who's if they pick up Leary, who would be the odd man out not starting, do you think?
I mean, I think it would probably be Lolito. I still believe, and I could be wrong about this. I mean, we have to see how it plays out. That's the thing. We don't know what's going to happen with Streif. We don't know if he's going to get injured. We don't know if I think right now penciled in as a starter, as a tackle, are Armstead and Streif. And unless Streif falls off a cliff a la Stinchcomb, or, you know, Armstead gets injured or has trouble recovering from his knee thing, I really think those guys are the starters, and the tentative plan is Pete starting at guard. Now, I think Pete is also the primary backup tackle. So I think what happens is he doesn't stay at guard if one of those guys gets injured. I think he slides over. But for now, I think all three of them are starting on the offensive line with Pete at guard. I think that's the tentative plan. So I feel like Lolito, Landon Turner, Senio Calamete, they're all battling for that other guard spot. And if Leary comes in, he probably wins that battle.
Kevin, I feel like the Saints are going to make a trade for Leary, and they're going to give up a draft pick. And me and you have been screaming that the Saints need to stop giving up future draft picks. But today, on Twitter, I just said, I've accepted that Loomis is going to Loomis, and they're going to give up picks, and you just have to hope that it works out. But what would be a draft pick that you shouldn't be okay with it if it's whatever it is, because you don't want to give up future picks. But what would be a draft pick that would be absolutely so high that you would lose your mind even more than you're going to lose your mind? If that question makes any sense.
I personally think anything above a fourth.
But a fourth, you wouldn't lose your mind, or you would?
No, I would. Anything above a fourth. I mean, don't get me wrong. I won't be happy regardless of what the pick is.
Me and Kevin are just gonna groan. We're just gonna be like, ugh. But like, if they give up a second, we're gonna be like groaning and then drinking.
Right. Right. You're gonna hear me gargling because it'll be the whiskey.
Dave, do you think they're gonna add a guard? We talked about it. We speculated, but what is your Dave gut say?
Yeah,
about
I wrote a post like a week and a half ago titled "Should the Saints Trade for Ronald Leary?"
Him better than George O'Leary, huh?
Yeah.
O'Leary had a great resume, though. A fantastic resume.
You know, Leary pretty much got Wally tipped by Lyle Collins after he got injured last season. I mean, basically what that means, if you're not a baseball fan or you're not familiar with that term, basically Leary got injured. Lyle Collins came in his place, and he won the starting spot. And so now Leary is the odd man out on the Cowboys, and he wants to be traded. So the Saints have traded with the Cowboys before. I think there's a good relationship between the two teams, and I think Leary is would instantly be a starter on the Saints if they got him. So it's just a question of what they'd be willing to give up. I'm assuming it would be draft picks. I'm assuming
Dallas used a second to pick him, right? So
he was like a high draft pick, and he was a good starter. I mean, the Cowboys have always had a good offensive line for a little while now, and he was a starter. I mean, he would have remained a starter if he hadn't gotten injured.
I think it's – I mean, Andrew, fourth or fifth has got to be the minimum, right?
I would think – I mean, there's no way they're taking a sixth for a guy that's been a starter. But I don't know. I mean, remember the Saints got Paris Harrelson for a seventh-round pick, and he was a starting linebacker, a veteran guy. You know, Leary is he only started a handful of games last year, and Collins bumped him from the starting lineup. So, you know, it's like a fringe starter backup guard. You know, I mean, it's certainly worth no more than a fourth round pick, in my opinion. I think fourth would be pretty steep. Fifth feels about right.
They don't have a fourth for next
year. That's right. Yeah. So I mean, I think fifth makes sense. I mean, a sixth or a seventh, I would pull the trigger right away.
They gave up a seventh for Barrett Rood, for Christ's sake. I mean, come on. Let's not fool ourselves at the Saints. I mean, Kevin, I guess people got on me on Twitter, and I did take them, the people that I didn't block. I did accept it a little. Is it time to just accept that Loomis just treats draft picks like I treat bourbon, and that is you drink it right now, you don't save it for a special occasion?
If I ever found out Loomis drank the kind of bourbon you drank, I would probably lose all faith in him, period.
I drink Jack Daniels. I drink
You drink flavored bourbon.
Sometimes.
Yeah, he drinks the honey kind.
Sometimes, but sometimes
no,
I drink
the honey kind's better than the freaking apple stuff.
The apple stuff's better. But I drink Pappy Van Winkle. I drink some hipster regular old bourbon too. I mean, it's not just flavored. I mix it up a little bit. But continue.
Listen, you and whoever else on Twitter, y'all can go on ahead and accept that Loomis is certifiably insane, I will gladly, you know, be, I will be the last man standing on this hill, screaming about how they need to stockpile draft picks, and you can put my ass in the ground, and put on my freaking tombstone, he always said they needed to stockpile more picks.
Oh, Andrew, is there anything else that is, I mean, the Saints, we talk about guard, but defensive end kind of sucks too. Is there any, I mean, is there anything out there at defensive end that's kind of like, that's kind of maybe sort of a interesting option?
No. I mean, not unless you want to go like John Abraham, unless you want to go like old.
What about Freeney? Is he still?
All right, that's what I meant. I'm sorry, I meant Freeney.
About to be like, is John Abraham still playing?
Is he still alive?
I think Abraham is playing for the Cardinals, right? Is he still playing?
No, he tried to play a couple of years ago. They retired.
Yeah. Okay. No, I meant Freeney. But okay. Yeah, I think defensive end, I am worried about. I think it's one of those things where they have like some situational pass rush guys, Kika Hyde, Abali Gwacham, like. It's not that I think those guys are good necessarily. I mean, I still have hope for Kikaha, but I think those guys are at least serviceable. I'm more concerned about running downs. And so unless like Bobby Richardson or like this guy Onyemata, who they drafted, I mean, unless those guys kind of work out on first and 10, second and six, and can kind of hold their blocks on running plays, that's where I get worried, because, I mean, you got to remember, these last few years, the Saints have been giving up 4.8, 5.2 yards per carry. I mean, the run defense has been miserable, and I think a lot of it is just not setting the edge.
And that was one of the things, the underrated things about 2013, Andrew, when we did that chart all year. They were slightly above average on first down against the run. Like, they gave up less than 4 yards a carry, and it kind of set them up for success because teams didn't have second and six, second and five, you know? That was one of the underrated things about about 2013.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, no, I mean, the difference is in the other years is they would get 6-7 yards on first down, and then it just opens up the playbook. I mean, just like Goody was talking about just now, when you've got second and three, second and second two, you know, you've just got so many more options in the playbook, and it makes you so much less predictable as an offense. It's kind of wide open, and you can do whatever you want, and it's probably going to work.
All right, before we get to the Sean Payton draft pick, worst draft pick bracket, and a bunch of Twitter questions that we have, Kevin, I'm gonna throw out a theory that I made yesterday, and it's crazy, but I think it's accurate. The Saints have $50 million of cap room next year, and I think Mickey Loomis has done all of his moves and locked up Armstead and done everything because he is not giving in to Drew Brees, and he's going to tag Drew Brees. If it comes to that, he's going to tag Drew Brees and pay him $44 million next year and not do anything in free agency and let Max Unger walk, and Drew Brees is going to play on a one-year $44 million deal. That's my theory.
Without Max Unger.
What's that?
Without Max Unger.
Yes. Is my theory insane?
It's insane, but it's brilliant. Because it's like, listen, if Drew's going into the season, if he's going into the season not wanting to negotiate, okay, and then, like, I'm sure Drew will have another good year, and they'll go to the negotiating table, and yeah, I mean, I could just see Loomis saying, screw it, franchise, and then all of a sudden, like, some guys
or transition
paint or whatever.
Or transition him for 30.
I don't think it's a guarantee that Brees has another good year. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. He could get beat up out there, take some hits. Last year, he's shown that he was not necessarily totally durable. I think what Mickey's doing is, I think he's just waiting to see what kind of season Drew has. And if Drew has a good season, then maybe they'll give contract extension and add a couple of years. I don't think they necessarily would have to would want to tag him. I mean, $44 million for 1 year. I mean, that's absurd.
Well, I mean, but I mean, isn't that sort of maybe the hammer that Mickey Loomis is having at the table, saying, look, we have the cap room, we can tag you next year. You might want to take this deal that we're offering you now, where you get $50 million guaranteed, because if you
that's
get
like, what, it's like one third. That would be like one quarter of their entire salary cap.
I didn't say my theory was reasonable, Dave.
I don't think that's on the table.
I mean, you can't. At that point, you'd have Drew Brees, and then you would have fucking absolutely nothing left to build anything around.
You would
just have a shitty team.
You could transition.
That would be like
You could transition tag him, and then a team would have to give you a one if you didn't match it, and that would only be a $30 million cap hit.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly more likely. Or certainly
when did that rule get added?
I think that's always been.
With the new CBA.
Okay.
I mean, you can franchise or transition. So, I mean, Andrew, my theory is crazy. Andrew?
I don't think franchise tagging him is on the table. I just think $44 million or whatever it is makes it prohibitive. The transitional tag makes a lot more sense, but I just don't even think that's under consideration. I don't even think that's like an ace in the hole for Mickey Loomis. I still think both sides believe, we're going to get a deal done. I think that's what they think. Yeah. I think Loomis is just kind of posturing, and he's not feeling the pressure to do it now. And he's like, you can either accept my terms or, we'll be back at the negotiating table next offseason. That's fine. But I think Brees is, obviously they're far apart, but I just think at the end of the day, both sides feel like it's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. So let's get to the worst Sean Payton draft pick bracket.
I'm sorry to interrupt. What is the exact deadline for Brees to say, for that to be tabled?
Well, Brees has come out and said that he is imposing a deadline, that he wants it done before the season starts, and if it's not done before the season starts, then he's not negotiating till after the season.
Right, like preseason are we talking, or like?
No, I think that means week one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So okay. I think it's week one, and I still think it's less than 50-50 it gets done, but I could be wrong. All right, so the Sean Payton worst pick bracket, we've had the audio issue, so you probably missed rounds 2 and 3, but we're down to the Elite Eight, and boy, Kevin, does this Elite Eight suck balls. So let's start it off. Kevin, number one seed, Stanley Jean-Baptiste, number nine seed, Sean Canfield.
Man, I'm going Stanley Jean. I'm going the Pirate.
Yeah.
He was drafted fourth round, and he was like
second round.
Well, wait. So this was the Morstead draft, right?
Stanley Jean Baptiste. No, he was 2014. Man,
who am I thinking of? Oh God. I'm sorry. I'm mentally exhausted. I must be having a stroke. Okay, whatever. I'm still taking the Pirate.
Yes.
He was drafted with the expectation of being a starter, and or of competing for a starting spot.
Yeah, he was gonna turn the Saints defense into the Seattle Seahawks.
I mean, I go Stanley Jean-Baptiste as well, because here's the thing: the Saints were so desperate for a corner in 2014. Like, imagine if Stanley Jean-Baptiste had been good, the Saints probably would have won the division. And I'm not saying it's all his fault that they went 7-9, but they desperately needed him to be good, and he wasn't even roster worthy at this point. So Stanley Jean-Baptiste is my pick. Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, he's number one seed for a reason. So, yeah.
Dave?
And trust me, I do not like Sean Canfield.
Yeah.
But
Dave,
that's the pick.
I voted against Sean Canfield every round. I always thought that he was just a flyer. I never really thought anybody expected him to be anything significant. So Baptiste is definitely the worst draft pick.
This is a tough one. Charles Brown, the 4 seed. Kyrie Fort, the 5 seed. Kyrie Fort was a narcoleptic and fell asleep in meetings. And Charlie Brown was terrible and so bad that Sean Payton called him out in a post-game press conference and said he had seen enough. This one's hard. I gotta go Fort because just the Saints' overall inability to pick a linebacker drives me insane, so I'm extra bitter, so I'm going Fort. Andrew, who you got?
Yeah, I mean, I think on one hand you can say, well...
Oh, did Andrew drop out? That's new.
Maybe hit the mute button.
Maybe, no.
That would be hilarious.
God damn it, I hit the mute button.
Oh!
I pulled a Kevin. And LSU just buck nerd, by the way.
Oh, my
God. Dude, this one's for you, pal.
Yeah, yep.
So who do you got, Andrew?
Well, what I was saying, what you guys couldn't hear, but what I was saying is, on one hand, you got Charles Brown, who actually started games. Like, you can say at least he played. You know, with Fort, he was like Al Woods. Like, he was cut before he could even contribute on the field. But for me, Charles Brown almost got Drew Brees killed numerous times. And I think he's the higher pick. He's a higher draft pick. He's a second-round pick. And the offensive line, if he turns out to be good, is just in much better shape right now. So based on that, I'm picking Brown.
Oh, that's true. If Charles Brown wouldn't have been good, they wouldn't have had to pick Pete. All right.
That's right.
Who hasn't voted yet? Dave?
I'm voting for Charles Brown because he was definitely a high draft pick with a lot of expectation and just totally blew it.
Kevin, have you?
Yeah, Juge swayed me. I was originally going to vote for it, but I'm going with Charlie Brown.
Brown versus Jean-Baptiste is going to be a good one.
That is a strong. That is a strong, shitty matchup.
That's a semifinal.
Dave, number 2, Al Woods, number 26, Stanley Arnold.
Oh, man. The Wake Forest may come to an end here.
The dream of an all-Wake Forest final hangs in the balance.
Well, no, we already lost it, I think, last week.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, Chip Bonds.
Now, look, Al Woods was what? Was he a 6th or 7th?
4th. They traded up to get him.
Oh, he was in the 4th, though. And Chip Vaughn was what, round 3rd?
4th, Stanley.
No, yeah, but Stanley Arnold is the guy we're considering.
They all blur together, Andrew.
Stanley Arnold, he was what, the next round after that?
We should have combined them to one player, Andrew. Look back at this bracket. That's what we should have done. This should have been
like we did with Hazlitt linebacker.
Yes.
Chip Arnold.
The committee failure.
I'm going to go with Al Woods because I think he's actually turned out to be a decent NFL player on another team. And so the frustration level is maxed out because it proves that the Saints just don't know what the fuck to do with some players to get the most out of them. So
that's I'm going to go with Woods. That's why I'm going Al Woods, Dave. Exactly what you just said. Kevin?
Oh, you know what? That's what it was. I thought for a second. I confused Jean-Baptiste with Stanley Arnold.
Fair.
That's what it was. But oh God.
It's tough.
I have to go, God. Ugh. I can't decide yet. Jude, go.
Okay. Well, on one hand, you know, Arnu, I'll make the he lost the Super Bowl ring joke again, and that's borderline unforgivable. But the thing about Al Woods, I said this last week, and I'm sure no one heard it, but the thing about Al Woods is not only did the Saints trade up to get him, and he never played a down for the team, but the thing that kills me is that he basically ruined the Saints drafting LSU players forever. and Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis won't even do it anymore. They're
so
gun
shy based on the
Al Woods experience.
What do you think they do in the draft room? Like, somebody is like, I think we ought to pick Vidal Alexander. They're like, fucking
they're
Al
like, they're
Woods.
Like, cough,
shut your
like,
hole.
Cough, Al Woods, cough. So I'm picking Woods.
All right. You know what? Good thing I waited. Juge said it. They traded up to get Al Woods.
It's always a tiebreaker. That's key for
it. That swings it. That's the swing state.
That's
Al Woods.
Alan. All right. So, Andrew, 3 seed, Taylor Melhoff.
I think Al Woods could win this match.
Number 11, Johnny Patrick. Andrew.
Oof. This is the toughest one for me.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny Patrick, in my opinion, is the same thing as
the Pirate.
I put Johnny Patrick in the same bin as Stanley Jean-Baptiste. I mean, he was drafted only one round lower, and he was just as awful. Another just awful corner pick. And he shares an alma mater with Jeff Duncan, which is a major, major strike against him.
Right, but Andrew, that's why you should vote to eliminate him, because he did us all a favor by sucking.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to take Melhoff, and the reason why I'm voting for Melhoff is, if you spend a draft pick on a kicker, he better be good. I mean, it's so easy to get cheap free agents and undrafted rookies that kind of suck but can make it an occasional kick, that if you're going to spend a draft pick on a kicker, he better be awesome. And he kicked like 2 games ever for the Saints.
He didn't even last a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta agree with Andrew. You just, like, a kicker, even though you look at it and you're like, oh, it's a 6th-round pick. But when you draft a kicker or a punter, they gotta at least play for 2 or 3 years, minimum, for it to be. Or if they don't, it's a disaster. And I mean, God, the Saints kicking it. I mean, at what did the Saints have to do, Dave, for the special teams coach to get fired? Like, what has to happen? Because I feel like is there any scenario you could see where they would fire the special teams coach?
Yeah, when Peyton gets fired.
So 2021.
Whenever you think Peyton gets fired, that's when Greg McMahon's gone.
So who you got?
And Joe Vitt.
Who you got, Dave?
And apparently Bill Johnson.
Yeah. Who you got?
I'm definitely going for a kicker. They probably didn't even need to draft him. I'm sure he was going to be available after the draft. I mean, let's be serious.
So, Kevin, have you voted?
That's a great exasperated side, Dave. Kudos.
Clean sweep?
Clean sweep.
So we got...
Hey, how about my seeding, by the way? 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the semis.
Strong. The only thing...
You're always complaining about my seeding,
yeah,
Ralph,
this is pretty
damn spot on.
This is strong.
I'll admit this was the best job seeding so far.
This was strong. But remember, Andrew, didn't we... You sent it to me, and you had a couple guys missing, and we chatted on the phone a couple times. Like, you had Al Woods missing, and I think you had another
one.
And we chatted on the phone and, like, straightened it out. But this is...
That was an egregious omission.
But that, this is strong. But, I mean, this is the third one we've done. So, I mean, the committee's getting tighter.
That's right.
So, all right, let's do some Twitter questions. It's getting late. Kevin, this is from Dylan. When the Bills go 7-9 this year and Rob and Rex get fired, will you be amused?
I will be quite amused. I actually, you know what?
I can't believe he thinks he's winning seven games.
I don't think they're. You know what? Part of me thinks they're not going 7-9. Part of me can almost see him going 8-8 or 9-7 and challenging for a wild card spot.
Stop it!
Listen to me. I can watch the Bills watch the Bills defense be like top 12, top 10.
Stop
like
it.
Scratch the top. Listen, you're going to get that 1 year. You get the 1 year. And then, but you know, and then you start seeing photos of Rob Ryan at the Buffalo Greek Festival. You see him coming out of his favorite, bar. His favorite bar in downtown Buffalo, you know.
His favorite wing place.
Yeah.
His favorite wing place. Which he's going to his favorite sausage. His, Rob going to his favorite sausage his joint.
His favorite wing place is any wing place. The Bills had.
And then after that, boom, they'll bottom out.
The Bills hadn't made the playoffs in 98, so, I mean, they're due for just like a random 10-6 year that makes no sense.
Exactly.
I mean, they have to win the wild card because they're not going to beat the Patriots.
Well, yeah, and they'll get trucked in the first round.
Andrew, who would you rather have a career year, Mark Ingram or C.J. Spiller? That's a good question.
Oof. I mean, C.J. Spiller's best year was ridiculous. I mean, his career year so far is what he had like 1,200 yards. Yards rushing and
550 receiving. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I mean, his best year was way better than Ingram's. So yeah, I would pick Spiller just because of the sheer numbers.
This is a good. This is an interesting question. Another one from Dylan. If I told you the Saints D would be ranked 12th against the run, but 29th against the pass in 2016, would you take it, Dave?
Wait, say that again? What were the numbers?
They would be ranked 12th against the run, but 29th against the pass. Would you take it?
No. If you switch those and were 12th against the pass and 29th against the run, then I would take that.
See,
but if they're going to be 29th against the pass, that's like the same shit we've been seeing.
No, I would take it, and here's why. There's a much greater chance that if you're 29th against the pass, those passing yards are empty calories, like in 2009. The Saints gave up a shit ton of passing yards, but whatever, because they were up 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. It didn't matter. If you're 29th against the run, I think it's worse. Andrew, is that a crazy theory of mine?
No, I agree.
All right. Let's see what else we have here. Andrew, are the Saints looking to get weird with tight ends this year?
Absolutely. I mean, their third tight end is making, what, $2 million a year? Their third guy? So, I mean, you don't pay that. I mean, they have shelled out so much money to tight ends this offseason.
Jumbo package!
Between matching the Bears' offer for Hill, keeping Hooman, and the ridiculous contract they gave Kobe Fleener. There's no way you spend that much on tight ends unless you're looking to get weird.
Alfredo asks, can you have a podcast via Ravens? That'd be the way to work through the audio kinks. Yes, it would be.
Remember when we joked about Rob Ryan having a safety fetish? Well, I feel like Sean Payton's developing a tight end fetish.
I think he is too, because I think they went heavy tight ends last year, Andrew, and it kind of saved their offense. It made them kind of go. Like they started it when they were 1-4. If the Cowboys, let me see this. Would you do a John Jenkins for Leary swap? That's a good question.
No. Well, I only say that because I don't think that we would have to. I think that we can probably get him for just a draft pick. And I, you know, Jenkins is serviceable. He's
serviceable.
I mean, he's good to have for depth. You know, you don't want him to be your best defensive tackle, but you know, it wouldn't be bad if he was like your fourth or fifth.
He's like a frozen pizza when it's raining and you don't want to go get food.
Who did the Saints start a defensive tackle if he's gone?
Fairly.
I mean, you got Fairley, Rankins, and then what? Nothing.
Canada guy?
Right. And Fairley and Rankins are basically the same position.
You can't play Richardson at tackle, not on rundowns, right?
No. Definitely not on first down.
And that'll be...
They need a fat guy.
And Jenkins, he definitely fits.
He qualifies
for the fat guy. Yeah. All right, that ends the questions for today. Thanks everybody for the questions, and we want to definitely thank people. Even though last week the podcast was a bit of a train wreck, it was because of the donations, and we had SoundForge, and we have the audio programs that we were able to purchase because of the donations, that we got a podcast at all. So we want to thank you for that. Keep donating. We need to keep the lights on. We could even do better and have a backup to the backup to the backup to the backup. We could have my wife holding out a 1970s speaker.
My wife.
Got it in just at the end.
Just at the end. But so you can go to Saints Nation. Andrew's got all kinds of cool stuff of the top most valuable Saints. He's got some other cool stuff up there. Go to Canal Street Chronicle. Dave's got roster stuff, predictions. He's got articles that he actually wrote. Like he said, he wrote a post about should the Saints trade for guard, which Dave, he's so busy running his empire that he hadn't had time to write as much anymore, but he did. So go there and read that. And Kevin is on the Twitter. Kevin is on the Twitters doing stuff.
As Sean Orleans, at Sean Orleans, I had to take away Hakeem drops the ball.
No.
Yeah.
You got rid of that?
Yeah. Why? No. I changed it.
Oh no.
Yeah. And also too, people ask,
I feel like a piece of me has died.
Yeah, me too. And all these people on Twitter,
give Juge an Academy Award. He sounded legitimately crestfallen by that. That is great. Got me feeling emotional over here.
Oh man.
I gotta pour one out for at Hakeem drops ball.
Hakeem drops the ball. It was a great blog that has like 8 posts. No,
motherfucker. I made a lot of posts, and then at some point it was just like, fuck it.
it was time to go to
OK Tinder.
It was
pretty much.
It was like the Titanic. It never got going. So do
that
all
was
that.
A terrible metaphor.
It was. So, metaphors,
no way.
Yeah, and all the people, all the people on Twitter asking me about, you seem to be blocking more people. I'm like, yes. Consult my profile. The Twitter blocking policy has changed.
I can't believe you blocked the angry hoodad. Good
I
for you.
I blocked a lot of people, man. I just,
you sound a lot happier. I got to be honest.
Here's the thing, man. I just like. You can yell at me, you can make fun of our audio, you can make fun of me being crippled, you can make fun of my Saints, you can make fun of whatever you want. But don't troll me about how I'm having the same Saints conversations over and over again. Dude, it's the off season. I go on Twitter, I want to talk Saints. If I want to talk Drew Brees' contract for the 9,000th time, I'm going to do it. Either join the conversation or just leave me alone. If you troll me, you're getting blocked. You know? I got a 6-month-old. When I'm feeding him or doing whatever I'm doing to him in the middle of the night and I'm on the Twitters, I just want to talk Saints.
Yeah, I got to say, young kids makes your tolerance for bullshit go way down.
Yeah, yeah. Because you have to have so much patience with them. Yeah. You can't have patience anywhere else. You let nothing else.
Right, like you're clean. Right, I mean, you're cleaning up actual human shit. Why do you need to deal with bullshit?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, all right. So, thanks to everybody for joining us. Until next week, the bar is closed.